Is that a knock at the door? Yes, it is. Is that the pizza guy that you've been waiting for an hour and a half? No, even better. It's a podcast. Hey, everybody. It's me, Stefan Sutani, with a comedy advice podcast coming at you with a meaty dish of an episode here. We've got Sarah Tolomash, hilarious comedian. She's been on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, The Late Late Show with James Corden. She's been on Comedy Central roasting her husband, Joe List. And she's also got her new album, Voluptuous Boy. I always want to sing it like Voluptuous Boy, you got a new album, but I'm not going to, so I'll spare you that. But you guys, this episode is jam-packed with advice. Sarah talks about her comedy career, what's worked for her, how she's been able to be as successful as she is, and I love the fact that she is also a helper. She wants people to not make the same mistakes that she did. So it's a really awesome episode. She is an incredibly talented, intelligent, funny person. And I have a link in the show notes to support her through following her on social, listening to her new album, which I highly recommend you do because it is my favorite album this year so far, which is a tough thing to say because I've heard a lot of amazing albums. Comedy is just booming right now. It's surging. And I'm so happy because in quarantine, people not being able to talk to each other or see each other, people still in their houses, not going out as much. We need this to thrive and grow. So guys, laugh. Laugh and learn. Laugh, learn, love. It's an adaptation of the Julia Roberts film. And you don't even have to go to India or Italy. You can just stay at home and laugh. Before we get into it, I just wanted to say a huge thank you. If this is your first time, I really appreciate it. Gracias, grazie, arigato, danke. You guys are awesome. And for all of you listeners coming back for more, you voracious listeners that just keep drilling through episodes, thank you. You guys are boosting my ego when I see the download numbers going up. And then I really appreciate all of you guys that have subscribed, told your friends, talked about it, shared on social, and left a review. That's really important. And if you guys want to support me on Patreon, you can do that too. I have a link there in the show notes. You can get some bonus content. You can get early releases and ad-free stuff. So it's really, really cool. So thank you. Thank you. You guys are awesome, and I love you. All right. Enough of the sappy stuff. Let's get into the episode.
A comedy advice podcast.
An advice podcast for Stefan
and friends.
Make exaggerated statements not meant to be taken literally.
What was that, Stefan?
Comedy advice podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of A Comedy Advice Podcast. My name is Stefan Sutani, and I'm your host. Joining me today is a glorious, amazing guest. Her name is Sarah Tolomash.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, besides being extremely hot in the summer of NYC, how is everything going over there?
Pretty good. Things are slowly getting better. Like I did an outdoor show yesterday and then I did an outdoor show in Royersford, Pennsylvania. So I'm slowly starting to run spots all over the city and then outside of the city a little bit.
How far away is Pennsylvania?
It's about maybe 2.5 hours. It's really not that far by car. It'll be further or more annoying to get to if you had to take a train, but
the subway doesn't go that far.
No. And then if you took, I wouldn't want to take a train to that gig because I was just doing a guest spot. It was my husband's show, but I wouldn't want to do that much traveling to get to that gig.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Back before, by the way, I was going to ask you, before things had closed down, how often were you or how far were you traveling to get to gigs? Was it all just spread throughout Manhattan, downtown, Queens, et cetera? Or were there some other Royersburg gigs that were like 2.5 hours away that you were going to a lot?
Oh, before pandemic?
Yes. BP.
Oh, BP. Yes. I was going all over. Like I did a lot of spots in the city. And then I also was doing a little bit of the road and things had picked up. Like it was kind of a bummer because I was starting to headline a lot more. And then I felt like that as soon as that was happening, then the pandemic hit that. Now I'm like, oh shit, I hope I get to. People remember me.
Oh, no. Well, hey, fortunately, you had the album that came out and it is amazing, voluptuous boy. I love Thank the name you. As well. I don't know why, but I keep singing it in my head to the tune of Promiscuous Girl.
Oh, somebody, was that you on social media? Or somebody had said that they were doing, they had the same problem. Or maybe it was you. Maybe, I'm not sure.
I don't know, who knows? Yeah, yeah. But hey, it's a catchy way to remember the title. And so,
yeah,
it's awesome. I did order it on Apple Music, iTunes, but it's available everywhere your ears can consume content.
Yeah, it seems so.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about it. So you did it right on the cusp of when Corona came down upon the United States.
I was fortunate. I felt like I got my album in right under the buzzer because things really shut down about, I think, a week after, like September 13th. I think the Cellar was doing shows. And then by the end, by Monday or Sunday or the 14th or the 15th, things had shut down.
Wow. Yeah, because I even heard a Corona joke in there and I was like, oh, this is fresh. This is really, really fresh.
Yeah. And then it came time. I got my audio files right in the beginning of pandemic and quarantine. So I had something to do. So it was really easy for me to like overturn it pretty fast.
Oh, nice. Nice. By the way, and this is coming from somebody that doesn't know, but how does it work with getting the audio files and creating the amazing album that you've created? Like,
800 Pound Gorilla was the record company that asked if I'd be interested in doing an album. And anytime somebody asks, I always say yes. And they were a pretty reputable record label for stand up, so I felt comfortable because I didn't want to do. You can do it on your own, but they're really good at working algorithms and knowing what playlists to get on, like the science behind getting your numbers up.
Oh, smart. Yep.
Yeah. They know what your demographic is. They do all like data analyzing. So they know where you might hit harder than other markets. So I was like, sure. Cause that is not information I would have known on my own. so they had, and they record, and I chose New York Comedy Club because that's the club I perform at the most. And I love them and they've always been so nice to me. And they have on 24th Street, they have like a nice black box. That's like a nice room that the laughter resonates pretty well. So, and they had already recorded albums there before. So it wasn't going to be a complicated thing. Cause I always say, keep things as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. So I just recorded there and then they sent me the files. And then I went through all the audio files and, I went through everything individually and, you know, trimmed some ends of jokes or beginning. If I felt like I was fucking around too much or it didn't seem like it added to the album, then I cut that stuff out. But I kept some things in there. There was a waitress spilled drinks, so I kept that in there.
Yes, I did hear that. I like that. Oh, that's cool. That's really, it's very similar to a podcast, except tons of work being able to, and years of writing and getting jokes just right and putting them in there.
Yeah, I felt like that process was actually quite satisfying. You know, cleaning up some of unnecessary or, you know, making it very cohesive. Maybe taking a joke that worked better in the second set and putting it in the first one. There's a lot of stuff that you can do. So it's because it's hard to, even when you're taping for 5 minutes to submit for a late night, like even that's it's hard to get a perfect tape. Mm-hmm. Like all the stars need to align for you. So
right.
You get worried about. So you do with the best what you have and then put it together and make it a nice album.
Oh man. And a nice album it was. I have to tell you, being perfectly honest, it's been my favorite comedy album that I've listened to this year.
Wow. Thank you.
It is. It's the only one. No, I'm kidding. I've listened to.
I know.
No, I've listened to quite a bit. And there have been some amazing albums that have come out this year. But yours was just, I listened to it twice. And both times, I was just cracking up. And I think there's a lot of brilliant writing in there. I also feel like your delivery is just, something about it, there's this magical essence or aura to it that I think the way with your voice it just propels the jokes where they're these just solid punchlines, and the way that you deliver them makes me chuckle. So
thank you. Because I'll listen and I'm like, God, I hate my voice. So no! It's nice to hear.
No, I think it's one of my favorite parts about it. The writing is awesome. But then the voice, I think, is just like a cherry on top of the cake because.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, hell yeah. And I have to say, too, I mean, I had a lot of favorite parts. So one of them was when I lived in New York, I would see people crying in public. And so when you told your jokes about that, it reminded me of that. And I come from a small town in Arizona. So my instinct is to go up to the people that are crying in public and be like, are you okay? And yeah. So I did that. And this girl was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? So I did get rejected. Like this,
that's what we do here.
This is normal. Stop. Go away. So that was really funny. But I also liked, you also had some really cool callbacks where you started off with your avocado bit. And then later you did a nice callback where you're like, I got to get home. I've got avocados waiting for me. And I just wanted to ask a little bit about the album in terms of the writing style. Like how long did it take to come up with this album? And I'll start with that question and then we'll go into more.
Sure. Well, I felt like it's not like I was like, I'm going to write this hour this year. I don't really work that way. Although I wish I did, because that would be really nice. But I like my jokes to come organically. So it'll just happen and I keep track of them. And so these were the jokes that I had probably been doing for the last 5 years. And so when building the set, like in the city, you only get 15 minutes. That's usually the longest amount of time that you get. So I would build it that way. And then when I did worked on doing 45 to about an hour, then things kind of changed. I switched the order. I was going to do the second half first and then the first half second.
Oh, okay.
But I felt like the second half was dirtier than the first half. And it's not a rule, but it's a good rule or a suggestion to go by is probably do your weirder and maybe dirtier stuff towards the end. Cause you want to form like, I guess, a trust with the audience. Some people don't like it, but if they realize that you're just being goofy or silly, then they'll be a little bit more, I don't know, easygoing on it or like it. So it's just easier to do it that way. So I switched it.
That I see some sense in that too, because I think when I was looking, I heard you talking about it on your podcast, Vag, but it was like Jim Gaffigan is just dominating the charts in Apple Music, and being a clean comic, I think just that accessibility makes him opens him up to a broader range of people. Where it's smart. Where I remember before I bought the album, I saw the free tracks that I could listen to, and they're the first ones, and so they're cleaner. So you can kind of ensnare your audience, being like, you can trust me.
You don't want to start talking about your pussy right off the top. I think that could be quite jarring, I guess. I mean, you can if that's your act and people are familiar with you. But I mean, this was my first album and I was wanting to get streamed. So I consciously put some of the dirtier stuff at that. I mean, there is dirty in the middle. There's nothing I can do. It just is how I write. It's like whatever comes to me, then I put it out there. So
yeah. Oh, I think it was very well constructed. I think that's a smart way to do it. You just leave the pussy jokes for the middle and the end.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's awesome. And then I know I was going to say too, so during quarantine, have you been doing Zoom shows, or as far as stand-up is going? I know you've been saying that you've been doing some outside gigs, but how has it been? How have you been handling not doing stand-up?
The Zoom shows were like, it was a necessary thing to do. Cause that, you know, you're like scrambling. You're like, what am I supposed to do? I can't just not create stuff. And people were offering to do shows. So anytime somebody asks you, I usually say yes. I'm never going to say no. I know some comics don't like doing Zooms, but after a while, you just get used to it. It's not the most ideal thing, but I was able, fortunately, because of the Zooms, I was able to probably build about 10 minutes of material just from Zoom shows. That way, when now I'm going out, I'm about to do my first road gig this weekend, I'll have some fresh material and I feel pretty comfortable about it. And it landed pretty well in the on the outdoor show. So I feel pretty good about it. But I think if I didn't have Zoom shows, then I wouldn't have been able to do it or have a gauge, because some people kept their mics unmuted so you could hear laughter in it. And then I, you know, it treated it like an open mic. So I always did new material. And I was like, well, if I bomb, all I have to do is walk 10 feet away and I'm at my couch. I don't have to take that long public transportation ride where, you know, as you said, you're just crying in public.
There you go. You could even be like, oops, I dropped something. And then
Yeah.
Just don't show up again. Yeah.
And then also I felt like the threshold was so low. Like nobody, if you're having high expectations on a comic in a Zoom show, like, I don't know, you're just going to be disappointed. So I felt like everybody was really cool about it. So it was, I thought it was like a kind of a cool way to perform, and then you kind of get used to it.
Nice. And then I know you guys, beyond stand-up, I know you've also been doing some writing. I saw some sketches come out on your Instagram page, which my favorite so far has been if friends from a movie were real. Did I botch the shit out of that?
No, you didn't botch it, but you got, I think you missed the genre, rom-coms.
Yes, rom-coms.
Yeah. Rom-coms.
I'm going to edit that out so it...
No worries. I just did that because I just watched Sleepless in Seattle and I was like, wow, Meg Ryan's behavior is a little unhinged in this. If you applied these techniques in your real life, like, you would be considered psychotic. And then I also felt like Rosie O'Donnell completely enabled that behavior. So my friend and I wrote a little sketch for it, about it, or making fun of rom-coms.
It was so good. I remember cracking up at the part where it just pans in on her after you said something and she's like, I'm in his house. And
like, go to him.
Yeah.
You need to tell him how much you love him.
So how, for the sketch writing and that, have you been doing that as long as you've been doing stand-up, or did that start to evolve after you were doing stand-up?
The sketch writing came quite a bit after stand-up, maybe 10 years in. But
okay.
I've always felt like my jokes are actually sketch premises a lot of the time. So I felt like it just went there naturally for me. And I actually feel like I'm more prolific in sketches than I am in joke format. Like, you can create more material that way. And I enjoy it. It's just a harder production to get friends involved, to wake up early on their day off to shoot a video for your success, not theirs. Like, for free, you're just like, it's such a pain in the ass. Like, this one was easy because my friend and I was like, you shoot on your phone whenever you can do it, and then I'll shoot on my phone, and then I'll try to edit it as best we can to make it seem like we're talking to each other.
Yeah.
But I had done UCB sketch for years, and I was on their house team, and I really enjoyed that process. So I kind of learned the basics of putting together a decent sketch.
It seems good from what I've seen so far, too.
Oh, thanks.
And you're obviously evolving in your comedy career, headlining before Corona and album out. And with the sketch, do you want to continue to evolve there? I mean, I know you just said it's a lot harder with friends that, you know, you try to get them up early and for your success. But,
well, you know, sometimes as the longer you do it, you find like-minded people. So, like, there's a lot of filmmakers that will do it for on a low budget. I never like to ask people to do stuff for free because it is quite a lot to ask. And if I have like $100, I can throw it that way. But some people will do it for free. And then at the same time, I'm just thinking, I'm like, well, I'm doing all of this for free. So,
yeah.
I mean, no, I'm not making any money from this. It's not like I'm profiting. But I would love, I actually want to go more into the realm of like making short films.
Okay.
So I am trying to do more sketches and shoot stuff on my own and try to get that out there. And then I'm trying to get my YouTube channel up. Nice. And IGTV seems to be very helpful. Like, cause if you already have a decent following on your Instagram TV, more people look at that than they do YouTube.
Oh, okay. Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. Nice. It's easier for people because it shows up on pages. You can hashtag it and you can find the people that will see it. Where like YouTube, you just put it up and you just hope that people find it. I think it's a lot harder to find videos
and
on there than it is IG.
And you said you didn't know about algorithms. Look at you.
I know. Well, you just end up that way. It's so funny. I just become like, I don't know. I'm like, I had no idea when doing stand up, I would be obsessed with algorithms. I feel like it's my new religion. Because it's like this entity you don't know anything about. You don't know how it works because you didn't create it. And then you just hope for the best when you appease it with your creations. And then you're like, please, Instagram algorithm, do me right.
Yeah, you have a little shrine of the Instagram logo. Please, please.
Yeah, please, please.
It's important though. Like you said, exactly like you said, like the reason you went with 800 pound gorilla is they know your demographic and know where you're going to hit harder and things like that. I do think like you're doing, it's useful to learn and scratch the surface. And if you can get beyond that, yeah, it's just such a complicated world of algorithms.
Yeah. I think it's just going to be the way that things will be, especially for, I think, comics and anybody that's creating their own content, like you're going to have to know that, I think. And you'll learn it naturally, I think, because if you want to do well, you want the people to see you. So you got to figure out all this shit.
God, there has to be some sort of college class or something learning algorithms.
I think there is, because there's people that are really good at it with aesthetic. Your aesthetic has to look cohesive. You have to have a niche voice or a niche. How do you pronounce that? I have no idea.
It's actually niche. No, it's, oh. you can do it. I found out you can do it either way.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, like people are really good about that where they can hit a number really fast and that can like really help your career more than, you know, doing shows in the city.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I've spoken with some comedians that they started off building their audience first and then getting into stand-up, which is crazy. And so they don't end up being very good once they start out, but they have this following and then it starts to level out where they get better. And I don't know.
Yeah, if you keep doing it, I think I'd rather have done that route than like get good. I'm hoping they'll meet and it'll just like skyrocket.
Yes. Yes. I think there's a nice balance in between. Cause I've also heard stories of, oh yeah, we're going to have this YouTube or TikTok star headline and then they're just awful. And so it's.
Yeah. And then like, if they do that, then their numbers next time around, it's just like something that you can't sustain. And a lot of them, I don't even think want to do the work when it comes to doing stand up. Cause you do have to go out every night when it's so much easier to just create something in your own living room and then put it up and then that's your voice that way. But so I think, you know, I get a lot of times people are like, I want to do stand up. What do I need to do? And I'm like, well, you just go to them open mics for like 10 years and you bomb, you know, quietly. And every now and then you get good shows and like people book you, but you go out and then they're like, oh, I don't want to. That sounds like that sucks. And I never see them end up doing it. Like people don't want to put in the work and you're like, you have to put in the work.
Everybody is just so focused on microwaved results here.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to get in shape. What do I have to do? Well, you got to go to the gym three times
eat
a
well.
Week. Eat. Yeah. You have to eat well. And they're like, that fucking blows. So then stand up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can't just go up in front of a mic and then make people laugh for 5 minutes straight. Oh, well, that sucks. So
yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think about all the people that like save the comics that you don't necessarily find that funny, but you can't deny that what they do is good on stage. Like, it's really hard to be there. Like, I remember growing up, there were comics that I didn't laugh out loud, but I still liked watching them because I felt like their story was captivating.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Or like they had like really great observations, but it wasn't like laugh out loud, piss in your pants, like some comic, like a Regan can be.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And you've been, by the way, I was going to ask too, you've been in New York for about 12 years. Before that, you were in Texas. I just off the line of constant rejection, bombing, bomb after bomb in open mics. What was it like moving to New York? I'm imagining you moved for stand-up. And yeah. Was it like a new level of rejection or competition, I'm sure?
Yeah, I mean, it's so fun. Like, I don't know what to tell people because it's hard to give people advice because everybody has their own route and things work differently for different people. But for me, if I could go back and change things, I think I would have moved to New York when I was about 4 or 5 years into stand up. Then, because I think you get really comfortable in that, you know, Houston is a big city, but it's not a place that people are getting discovered. So they had a decent scene and they still do, but like nobody cares that you're the big fish in that pond. So you come up and you think you're like the shit, and then you're back to doing the saddest open mics. And like traveling on train for like an hour to do 2 minutes at 10 o'clock at night. Like, I just feel like just get your good 7 minutes and then come to the city. Cause you can work on your material and no one important is going to see you for a while unless you put yourself in those situations. Like, you can, bomb and have anonymity a little bit around here. I think so, a little bit easier than LA, but yeah, that's how it was. And I've talked to a few, there's a lot of comics that were like, they're, you would consider them road dogs, where they're real, like they're headliners on the road and they go out every weekend, but like no one knows them just because industry is usually in New York or LA, and people are, I'm not saying they're lazy, but they'd rather just look in their backyard than scour the city or the nation for the next big thing. Like, you're going to get work from other comics. So you got to go to a scene where there's a lot of comics that are also doing really well, because they're going to see you and they're going to recommend you for shows. Nice. So when you're like, if you're in Houston, okay, so the one person that's doing well, they're only just doing the road. They're not going to recommend you for a late night set or all that. And I'm not saying don't become friends with people that you don't want to. It's just like, go to the place where everyone's succeeding.
Yes.
And so that's why I feel like you should go to New York or LA. And then also being around that caliber of talent, it really makes you work harder. Like, I came from Houston where we went up, we did a mic once a week, maybe twice. And then once a month, you would get asked to do the all male or all female showcase show. And then from there, if you were decent, you were asked to MC or maybe later on feature. And then, so you're not really going up that much. And it wasn't until I got to New York and you start seeing the people that you admire, you see their work ethic, and then you realize, shit. I've been doing this wrong. So it took me a while to figure that. And also I was an alcoholic. I'm still am, but I'm a recovered alcoholic. So I have now more time and I'm more responsible and like keeping my commitments, and I'm like a better person. So I have a more professional thing. So it took me a while in New York to figure that out. Like, you have to go out, you have to go to all the mics every night of the week. And if you're not going to a mic, go to a show, watch like other comics that you like, hang out or hang out at the clubs and see what mics that they have. And I don't know, sometimes you have to bark or do the phone calls during the day, but it's a great way for like people to see you all the time.
Damn. That's a lot.
I feel like I'm talking so much.
No. This is all. I almost wanted you to just say it again because our listeners, especially the ones that want to be comics, I think really need to hear this too. But no, that's amazing advice. And I think it's something that a lot of people, especially if they want to be comics and they want to know what it takes, especially if they're in like Phoenix where I am or somewhere, there are other places where you can see what people are really doing out there to succeed and realize you might be doing it wrong and learn how to do it right and really commit.
Yeah. There's like, I guess there's no right way of doing it, but there are wrong ways of doing it. And those are really obvious, but still people do it all the time. But like the right ways are just like making friends, getting up. And then I also suggest that I'm kind of a shy person. I'm not really an outgoing person. I found out about Twitter and making videos. Everyone's online like 24/7. So if you're starting to show up on the feeds all the time and people start seeing the way that your mind works, they're going to notice. Like that's how you can get writing jobs or like asked to submit packets or like do a sketch. They'll see that you can act or something and they'll ask you to be in their sketch. Like you can do that. That's another route instead of like having to go to parties all the time.
That is so funny because I just had another comic on that said the exact same thing. He got a TV gig because one of his goals was writing a joke every hour on social media. And somebody saw, yeah,
that's a lot.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I thought too. But that's really interesting that you say that too, because I didn't think that there was that much of an importance on it, but it seems like from the side of, yes, fans being able to understand how you work and getting some entertainment digitally too, as they're just mindlessly scrolling down their feed. Also, having you be discovered for different gigs or different things like that, keeping you top of mind for bookers or whomever. That's important.
Yeah. I feel like how I got my foot in the door for Colbert was from tweeting the booker. As soon as I did this one tweet, I got a DM from her about being interested for material or to submit a tape for Late Night. And then from there, like it took like 4 months and then I was on Late Night. So you never know who's following you because people retweet you. It's a cocktail party online. Be funny, have fun, you know?
So cool. And I was going to ask about the Late Show and the Late Late Show. Was that the like biggest accolade at the time that you had done? And how did you feel when you got invited to do the Late Show?
Well, it's such a long process. And I had been trying for years previously with Letterman. And I got pretty close, like enough where the booker was interested. And then I was going for more showcases for it. But then that producer had left the show. And this happens all the time.
No.
Like producers for TV shows, they don't last long at each stuff. They're always looking for new jobs. So it's like you really can't get close to some of these people because they're going to jump ship and go to a next thing. And then you have to start all over. So when that happened, I had to start over and then Letterman finished. And then there wasn't much Late Night for a while or stand up on Late Night for a while. And then it picked up again. And then Colbert started doing a lot more. And so, that one, yeah, she just reached out and then I started submitting. I sent her a tape and then she was like, she goes, do you have anything else? Which is never, you're like, you want them to be like, this is great. Oh,
fuck. Is this all? You don't have anything
else?
Yeah,
you're like, I was doing pretty great in there. It's all clean. I don't know what you want. Like, and then I thought you liked me. So then that part's so frustrating because as I said, it's like really hard to get a 5-minute tape because like, I don't know. Sometimes you're asking to go up on a show to get it. Somebody kicks the stand from where your camera is. Somebody sits in front of it. It gets knocked. You get a heckle. It's just never easy to get a good tape. And so I reached out and I said, well, why don't I write down every clean joke that I have? And then you choose the stuff that you like. and then I'll get a tape from there. And that was way better because a lot of times putting a tape together, it's a guessing work on what jokes they want. But then this way it gave the booker power on what they liked. And so it gave them part of the creative process and control over it. And it felt, and then from there, and then I gave her a tape and then I booked a showcase and then I got that showcase and I ended up being like the perfect placing of the lineup because that matters too. You don't want to go up first and you don't want to go up at the end, but if you can go like third or fourth in a lineup, the crowd is more warmed up and it's hopefully no one's blown the show to bits. And then so it's a wave that you can ride. And so I did really well that night. And then after that, they sent that to the next person up as a producer. And then I booked it. But that was a really long process. And sometimes it can be close to a year before you get to go up on stage. And then nowadays they're taping it in showcase sets and then they cut them and then they throw them in later. So you could get approved, takes a year to get on, and then it might take another year before you're set because that's happened before on Colbert. It's so disheartening. Like you never know when you're going to have it in the bag, at least for the first one. But once you get that first one in, I think it makes it easier. And then people have seen that you're not a complete idiot, you know, like you're not going to choke on stage because it is a high pressure set.
Yeah.
And then the second one was a lot easier after that.
I don't think that I've ever waited that long for anything in my life that short, except maybe when I asked my wife to marry me. That was but it's like, oh my God, I would be terrified of choking when I went up after almost a year of going back and forth. Am I going to get it? Am I not? Working on getting the perfect set taped, going through and
And then even when you tape it, sometimes it's not even a guarantee that it's going to air. That's happened to a lot of comics too. So you never know when it's in the bag. It's only in the bag when it airs. You can't tell people you went up. And then like, cause there's a high, there is a good chance it might not make it, but And that's not like a crazy, unlikely story. Doing at least for your first one, it takes forever to get that first one in. And then after that, it should be a little bit smoother sailing.
Mm. Wow. Well, shit. That's all I gotta say.
You just have to be like, keep that one. That on the fire and then focus on other stuff in the meat, like just have a bunch of little projects that you're working on. Cause sometimes one thing doesn't work out. At least you can move on to the next thing or just constantly be creating something. So you don't, if you get a no, it's devastating, but at least when you get a no, you got something else to work on.
That is excellent advice. That's something that I've also been trying to do when booking guests, for example. Sometimes I'll get really excited and I'll think about the agenda. I'll think about things that I want to ask and everything like that. And then they cancel on me or something happens. Not necessarily saying it's their fault or anything.
Yeah.
But if something happens and then I'm super bummed about it. So I try and make sure that I've got multiple podcast irons in the fire and so that I can focus on something else. And I feel like that's been really helpful because I think deep down I am an anxious individual, and so I do like to dive into the world of things and think of different scenarios, sometimes worst case scenarios, and I dwell on that. But I do like to I find that, like you said, when I focus on multiple things, it helps ease some of the unneeded attention on a certain thing and then allows it to level out. So.
I mean, cause I think we put so much pressure on that one thing to work out and they just feel like in this business, I don't know, nothing ever really works out, to be honest. Like your success to your failure. It's such an awful ratio.
Exactly.
It's all failure. So you have to get used to it and just appreciate the successes.
That's great. Throughout all this rejection, what helps you stay positive?
Well, I feel like I'll try to work on it. Like, okay, if I can write a new joke, then I always feel better. Or if you have a good set that night, that kind of like brings everything back to zero again. Like, because it always feels like you're as good as your last bomb or like your last set. So, but I always try to tell myself that's like all that stuff happens all the time and those feelings aren't permanent. That if you can't, and it doesn't mean that you're not going to come up with other stuff, that you're just always going to come up with other stuff to work on. Like, I don't know. Sometimes if my stand up, I feel like it's stale right now, then I'll try to work on writing sketches. That's why during pandemic, I felt like I wrote more sketches than stand up, just because I was like, I don't have an outlet for stand up right now. So I got to do something else.
I like that. Well, that's awesome. This was so much advice and tips and everything. This was fantastic. Thank you so much, Sarah. We're going to get into the self-help portion and answer some questions.
Okay.
But before that, Great. Is there anything else that you wanted to say? Any tips for comedians or just people in general?
No, but you know what? I love not like giving advice because it just because something worked for me doesn't work for everybody else. But like, I just want people to have an easier time than I did. Like, so if I can help in any way or make things better for you, then I would love that for anybody. Because a lot of times you're just floating through this by yourself, figuring it out on your own, and you don't know these things. So it's always helpful when somebody lets you know like a better way of doing things or how to think about stuff rather than maybe the way that you were thinking wasn't working.
That's really nice. Not only are you brilliant and a great joke writer and sketch writer, you're also a nice person, which I think is a rare gem these days. Because there are some people that just take their tips for success and then just hoard them like a troll. But
yeah, nasty people.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So that truly is awesome. All right, we're going to get into the self-help. We're going to answer some questions. But before we do, I like to center us with a quote, an inspirational quote. But before I provide mine, I like to ask my guests if they have any inspirational quotes or quotes that help them get them through their days.
Oh, my God. No, I'm not really.
Pass.
I mean, I think of stuff like there is a saying in like the 12-step program of like to accept the things that you cannot change and the courage to change the things that you can. Like that helps me feel better. And then also I think Amy Poehler in her book had something that I liked to kind of treat comedy as like as if it's your relationship or whatever. It's like as soon as you start working on yourself, then everything seems to fall into place.
Wow, for saying no, you had two good gems. So that's
Sorry.
No, that was great. That was great. I do have to say too, the Serenity Prayer. I think that's a really, it's an unbelievably tension releasing saying, I think.
Yeah. There's a lot of things in this business that are beyond your control. So you have to accept it.
Yeah. Yes. Just accept it and understand what you can accept or what you can change and understand what you can't. Exactly.
Yeah.
That is amazing. All right. Well, great quotes for just off the top of your head. We're going to go into a quote and just try and decipher it. This is not by a person. This is actually by a robot. It's InspiroBot. And what its main function is to take the wisest words known to man and just mash them together for a really juicy, inspirational quote. So this week, InspiroBot says, "Only when you've experienced other people's marriage will you confront the unknown." So, a lot to unpack there. I think InspiroBot's telling everybody to do wife swap because
that's what it feels like.
I love it's such an eloquent way of saying. I think it's saying cheat or get into an affair, but it's saying experience other people's marriage, which I think is very fancy. Being like, I've experienced marriage before. Not my own.
I lived with a married couple and it made me want to leave when I shared it. Yeah. Cause you're like, I don't know. It's hard to deal with other people's bullshit
and squabbles and things like that.
Yeah. To feel that energy in the house where you're like, oh, I don't want that.
Yeah. Yes. I feel like if my wife and I ever had somebody live with us, well, I don't think we would, because it's just so, sometimes we fight. That's just how it is. And so.
Yeah, I don't want people to know what we're fighting about.
That's the most embarrassing part. We're fighting about how I'm placing the bananas in the fucking bowl. I'm like, I place them stem down because then I grab them because I peel them backwards. And she's like, that's ludicrous. You shouldn't be doing that. And then somebody's just staring in the distance like, what's going on?
Oh, so. I love that. I love when couples, their little quips that they fight over, because it's really fascinating. That's a new one. I've never heard that. It's very similar to putting your... Do you put your forks down in the dishwasher or do you put them up?
Oh God, don't even get me started on this.
Yeah.
No, I put them prong up now.
Because, me too.
I used to put them prong down because I have very large hands, and then I would go, I guess I can't, my dexterity is not that of a human, because I go down to grab them and then I would just get pricked with fork prongs.
Oh. Yeah. So. Well, I just don't like the fork to be in that nasty water that gets dripped off from everywhere else from the silverware.
Okay. So you see, you're explaining to me logically how it, why you don't like it. I understand that. My wife and I, it gets a little more heated, and well.
It, that's a big debate though in relationships though.
I didn't know that actually. I didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't have a dishwasher for our first 7 years. So we were living in Jersey in a small little apartment. So we didn't have to worry about that. But now the tensions are high with the dishwasher. But
yeah, my husband and I just got, he got a car, and that's causing tension because he has road rage.
Oh, no. Really? Really?
It's not out of control, but sometimes I'm just like this. I don't want to hear. I can't handle it.
Samesies, I guess I should say, because I also have road rage, and I don't even know how to explain it. I will just yell or shout at a person for wronging me in traffic, and my wife is like, "That's so unnecessary," and I'm like,
"Yeah,
well,
what is that gonna do?"
I'm like, "Well, if I don't say it now, it's gonna come out when we talk about the bananas in the banana bowl." So
I
it's
know.
Just...
So you gotta take it on a stranger.
Exactly. So anyway, that might be a thing of if you're living with a married couple, you're experiencing the unknown, and it should stay unknown because you don't want to know about it. All right.
Exactly.
Perfect. I think we nailed it. We're inspired now. So we're going to move on to a question. This is from Reddit. It's found by our fan, Adrienne. How do I stop people from laughing at me for bowing to them? I like doing it, and it's a British tradition I'd like to keep alive. Now even friends and family laugh at me for doing it. Can't deal with this much longer. Help?
Well, I feel like now's the time to bow. And now they're not going to be laughing at you because we can't do handshakes. So I say you're a trendsetter and keep at it and don't listen to the haters.
It's now gone back in vogue, and it's like the British handshake, we can call it, where you bow.
Yes.
And you're 6 feet away. You're good. I think you're absolutely right. It's the avant-garde handshake.
Yeah, I like it better because there's no power move with the bow, where like a handshake, some people give you like the worst, they're so hard, and you're like, it's like they want you to think that you're their bitch or something.
And I do feel like I'm their bitch.
I do. I'm like, what are we doing here?
I always try for medium grip strength because I don't, I mean, if I see a frail hand, I'll go lighter, obviously, because I'm not I don't want to establish dominance over you. But then guys, they love to do this. I feel like they'll grab my hand and then they do the thing where they bend the top and the bottom finger. And I'm just like,
I know. And sometimes it's painful. And then there's videos of politicians. Apparently, when you're a politician or like in politics or whatever, you want to have your hand on top, and that establishes dominance. So you'll see videos of politicians trying to like
get
hand
on top.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's so crazy. That's why I was like, if you do bowing, then nobody establishes dominance. It's just like a fair
Yeah.
Ground, I think. So I like it.
I like that too. Unless I feel like there's a way to make it established.
Somebody will figure
Somebody's
it out.
Gonna bow lower than the other one, and then they're gonna get all competitive. But I would take that any day over the strong handshake because I always I don't miss that. Yeah. I'm so thankful you brought that up because
I don't like it either.
I just had someone over to look at a pool that doesn't exist yet, but he's like, I don't do handshakes. I'm like, good, me neither. I did do a little awkward bow. It was like more of a shoulder shrug a little bit.
Like a turtle.
Yeah, a little curtsy. Hello, sir. But
yeah.
I feel like a bow would be nice. And I did miss, because I feel like there is an interaction that's needed to fill the place of the handshake.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because like when we're being brought up on stage, I think James Madden brought me up the other day. He's been bowing and I was like, I love it. To just bow and then go to the mic. That's fine.
I love that. And that's so much less awkward than like the elbow.
Yeah, this is stupid. I'm not into that one.
Yeah, I'm done with it. All right. So bowing, I feel like just keep doing it. And now that people can't shake hands, they'll follow suit.
Yeah, it'll catch on.
Yeah, they'll bow down to this. All right. We've got our next and final question. This is from Reddit. It's from our fan Christina. It's a long one. She says, how do I get over my fear of zombies? I've always been afraid of diseases and unnatural things. I got into The Walking Dead and watched some zombie movies to try and get over it, but it just gave me more graphic ideas of what they could do to me and my loved ones. Whenever I see something with more than 10 minutes of zombies in it, when it's dark out, I frequently check behind me and in unlit rooms. When I calm down and am able to sleep, I sometimes get zombie dreams that are becoming more and more horrific. I wake up in a sweat hours later and that they're out there and have to stay awake until the paranoia fades. I know they aren't real and I don't expect to see them in real life when I'm out and about, but at night it's a completely different story. If watching zombie media makes it worse, what do I do?
First of all, like, you know, I don't want to be dismissive, but I don't think zombies don't exist. So but who knows, you know, I don't want to be, they could be out there.
But they're not. So you're saying this is silly to believe in something that's not real at all.
I don't want to be silly. I don't want to say it's silly. Cause I still check behind my shower curtain every time I come home, but that's just for like, you know, murders.
But that's something very real versus checking your curtain for zombies. That might be a little less real.
Yeah. So maybe like, I don't know, watch some true crime and establish something that could be real and that'll substitute your zombie fear and that you can still, you know, check behind you all the time. But at least now people will be like, oh, it's for a murder, right? Instead of like a zombie.
That's true. Study up on the facts. Look at your crime map for wherever you live and see how many murders are happening to innocent
people.
Compared
to zombies.
Yeah. Look at the zombie crime map and then the homicide crime map. And you'll see that you have real things to worry about that can replace your fake silly fears.
Yeah.
I think that's good. Because then when you're checking behind your back every 5 minutes, someone's like, what's wrong? If you said zombies, they'd be like, ha, ridiculous. But if you're like murderers, then they'd be like, okay.
I get it. You're a lady.
I love that bit, by the way, on your album.
Thank you. It's a fear.
Yes. Yeah. I totally get it. And valid fear. And I love how you turned it on the guys, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys are content creators. If you guys didn't murder us, then there'd be no true crime and then there'd be nothing for ladies to watch. So it's just like this like vicious cycle.
Half of us podcasters would be out of a job right now.
Exactly.
All right. So anything else? I mean, the only other thing that I'm thinking of, I think we already kind of hit it, but just stop watching zombie stuff. Cause I feel like,
I do love zombie movies, but I mean, I don't know a way to defend them. Is it usually a shotgun? Maybe you should get a shotgun. I'm pro gun for zombies. So
fair enough. Yeah. Shotgun, maybe booby trap your house too. Bear trap.
Yeah. That or might like be- run to an abandoned mall, I think. Don't they hide out? Like you can form base there. Yeah.
That's a good base. Carry, I think they eat canned beans and not zombies, you, but eat canned beans and stay in an abandoned mall, bring a shotgun and
wish for the best.
Yeah. Don't bring your friends or family because then they'd get eaten. But yeah, I think that'd be pretty good.
Yeah. Travel light.
Don't have the emotional burden of loved ones with you.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's awesome. All right. Well, that is the last question, and it's time to say farewell. Before I give you the bow of goodbye, Sarah, it was absolutely awesome having you on the show. Where can people find you? What have you got going on? It's time to plug. Tell us everything.
Wow. I have one show on the horizon. It's at Arlington Draft House, but it's this weekend, so I don't know if you'll get there on time in Virginia. But you can always find me on Instagram and Twitter. It's the same handle, STOLLEMACHE. My first initial with my last name.
Nice. And if you guys are like, oh, I can't spell because I'm from Arizona, it's going to be in the show notes. So yeah, you guys can just click right there and then it'll lead you right to her Instagram profile or Twitter. Bam. Awesome. And then I'll also have a link to your album so everybody can go and listen to it. If I can't be emphatic enough about it. It is hilarious. And I had a load of chuckles and chortles. So I know you guys will too. So it's awesome. Well, I think that's it. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.